and start in LaLana too. Love and start in LaLana too.
It's here. It's the Day Trippers. And so, in the final stage of our ongoing experiment to prove that literally anybody can host a podcast, they've decided to let the foreigner have a go. It's DT hosting the DTs, and we've all got the DTs as we await the return of TD. So, on tonight's show, we look ahead to the first game of the season, and we try to figure out where the heads are at heading into the Britannia Stadium this Sunday. We frame it with reference to the final two preseason games, and we talk starting lineups. Joining me tonight is Andy Young, Steve Daly, and the ever-present, omnipotent, Phil Casey. Right, so let's go.
Let's do it.
All right, lads, let's start with some football chat. So the season's about to start. Where are we with our excitement levels, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10? How are you feeling, Andy?
I feel like I'm on a
scale of 1 to Dave Thomas.
A scale of 1 to Dave Thomas, how are you feeling?
Without the Thierry Henry advert, would be about 6.
Right.
With that advert, you're looking at an 8.5.
I'm looking at an 8.5. Yeah. I wouldn't want to look at you at 10, mate. I got to be honest.
It's a 2.5 increase, that ad.
Yeah.
It's probably the best Sky ad since the old Alive and Kicking. Remember Alive and Kicking used to be the music for the season starting, and then it became the music for Sky's football coverage.
Well, yeah, Elton John's one was good as well.
Fuck Elton
John. Are you ready?
No. It was never.
Are you ready for come on down?
I think that's the only song that is.
We're at 2 minutes. We have to edit. All right, so Andy's an 8.5 because of the Thierry Henry advert. Steve, where are you?
Yeah, listen, I can't wait for the start. It's why we fucking do this poxy podcast, let's be honest. But no, you know what I mean? I can't wait for the season to start. It's a new season, new chance to blindly hope we can achieve something, which we're not going to. And yeah, it's Premiership football back. You know, I hate all the wanky friendlies and international shite. So yeah.
Okay.
I'd say a good solid 8.
Let's all pause
while we wait for Phil.
Phil, how are you feeling?
Sitting at a solid 3.
that would be high at the moment. I'm not looking forward to the new season. I'm just not looking. Me and football have just fallen out of love over the summer.
You're just a miserable
I am serious. No, I can't. I just can't. And this is the worst I've ever been heading into the season. Well, since Hodgson, this is the worst. I'm just not buying into it. I'm hoping.
Yeah, we finally bought a player from Germany.
Well, we bought one last season.
So now, perhaps.
Okay, we finally bought a huge performer in Germany.
But you're just asking me how.
And we bought the player that you claim to have wanted for like 9 years.
Dave, I can't put my finger. I'm just. All I see is I haven't got over the end of last season. So I'm hoping that the performances lift me over the
first
couple of weeks.
What's it take to get you over?
If we can win our first 3 games on the spin, I'll be back up again.
What's that?
Stoke, Bournemouth,
Arsenal, isn't it? Yeah. All right.
Arsenal away is a big Arsenal, but anyway, we're going to come to our first.
How would you feel with 7 points, taking a point at Arsenal?
It depends, again, how the results fell. You know the way.
Hey, why are we even asking him? What's the best we're going to get Phil to?
A 5.
Right?
If we go out and put in a really good performance,
you want to see the system being right. You want to see the choice of players.
I want to see something that says to me that we learned all the lessons that we didn't learn last season. And that's my fear is that we haven't learned those lessons. So that's
fair.
That's why I just can't get aboard the fucking happy train yet.
Can I just say something?
Yeah, go ahead then.
I think this is Rodgers' last chance, right? It can't be anything other than his last chance. He can't have a shit season like that again.
Yeah,
and get away with it.
No, he can't. So last season I felt he completely bottled got the team into the Champions League. Had a couple of injuries, then Suarez leaving as well. And he found himself in a position where he ended up going against everything he promised and believed in himself because he didn't have the balls to just go with the players he had. He changed everything. So this season, I think he has to, if he's going to go out, he's going to go out swinging and go back to his own ways. So I kind of fully believe that he'll go back to trying to play attacking football, similar to the part in the middle of the last season.
And I don't think we're a million miles away in terms of I will be there if I see that from the off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now we have the personnel to do it.
Yeah, but at the moment, and from what I saw through pre-season, right, and I hate putting too much emphasis on what I saw through pre-season, but I didn't see
I think people who put too much emphasis on pre-season are idiots, if that's what you're called.
You called on that at some point, right?
Yeah.
It sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying, though. There wasn't a high tempo element to the game. Yeah. And it's hard to see how they just switched that on Sunday.
Yeah.
Lunch or
now, if it takes 60 minutes or so and we win the game, like, and you can see a change in the last 40 minutes in terms of how we play as the players start to feel more, you know, involved in the system, yeah, and you understand what's going on, grand. But like I know we're going to talk about it, but that's just how my general feelings at the moment. That's where I am. It's not that I think it's a fucking doom and gloom and this is not going to happen the whole lot. I just, at this moment, I can't see the pointers that gets me really excited about what's going to happen.
Well, before we get on to things that might make us less excited, let's talk about something that people were excited about, which is like Christian Benteke's goal over the weekend, right? So, Andy, I know you were, more optimistic about the signing than a lot of people.
Yeah.
What did you make of his performance? What did you think of the goal? Is he a nailed-on starter for you against Stoke?
Of course he is, yeah. I mean, he's going to start every single game as long as he's fit. And even when Sturridge comes back, he's not going to be a 32 and a half million reserve.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm excited about him more than I am any other player. I think the negativity towards him makes me want to do him even better.
Yeah.
And I actually think, like, it's fucking exciting to see a player that can pull that out of the bag.
Yeah.
You know, on his debut.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's fucking such a super goal. Well,
so yeah.
And he scores that against anyone.
Well, as one of the people who sort of was unsure about him and still is, the one thing I saw in that Swindon game that I was happy with was the chance he missed in the first half. He was attacking the near post. But I said it last week. My worry was that he was going to be too Andy Carroll and just want to go to the back post.
Hang it up at the back post.
And hang it up all the time and look for headers. But I saw a lot on, and I know it's Swindon, whatever, but he was attacking that front post. And the chance that Firmino creates from the one that the Vigoro saved, right? I was saying, well, that's exactly where you want him to be, because he starts middle of the goal. If that was Carroll would have either stayed on the edge of the 18-yard box or just drifted and looked for the cross. But instead, he starts attacking the front post. Firmino just pulls a little ball back. And on a different day, he probably would have scored a goal.
Well, I think if he's three games in, he scores a hat trick that day, right? Yeah. Steve-O, you know, it is pre-season. I suppose we've got to remember that this time last year, Dejan Lovren looked like Beckenbauer against Dortmund. Right? But what was pleasing, I thought, was that it was something I didn't really know he had in his locker.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, I suppose, as Phil touched on there, it doesn't matter what team you're up against there, whether it's an international, you know, club competition or Swindon. He's made the movement that he's had during that game, the runs that he's made, he's going to make them whether he's up against a top class centre half or a Division 2 centre half. It doesn't matter. That's what that's how he's thinking about approaching the game, which was nice to see, because I was similar to Phil in the fear that he was going to be Andy Carroll Mark II in his approach, in his wanting it at the back post all the time. Similarly, the strike, an absolute cracker. Aww. You know, and it doesn't matter, yet again, if that's against Stoke, you know,
well, the fact that it's against Swindon doesn't make it easier, right?
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's not like you scored easier goal.
It's the technique and it's the strike, and any keeper's going to struggle to get over to that. So,
yeah.
So I have to say, you know, it's only a pre-season friendly. It's always great to see, first of all, a player scoring on their debut, just to give them the confidence to go into next week. And yeah, I liked what I saw. I wasn't for him signing, but now that he's here, and I'll support him all the way.
And Andy, the other thing that I think people talked about was that we would have to change our style to fit Benteke in. You know, watching the game on Sunday, did you get the impression that we had to fundamentally change the way that we played?
Next question.
You didn't watch the game?
No.
Same highlights.
Well, let me answer for you. No, we didn't.
No,
we didn't.
We didn't change the style. And that's great to see, because if Roger's going to work with him, what we said was, if there was a manager that could probably help a striker of his style change to being a more adaptive forward, it's probably Rodgers. It's one of his strong points, even though some people don't think he has many.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's good to see.
That's fair, Phil, right? We weren't, you know, throwing him crosses to the from deep to the back post trying to hit it long to him all the time.
I think he'd become more aware of the crosses purely because of that exact thing. So you're looking, when you're looking at the game,
I didn't notice it. Now I didn't even notice any deep crosses, really.
No, but I noticed crosses. But then, as I said, I think you're more aware of the crosses in game purely because he's there, right? And one of the narratives that's been going on is that he scores most of his goal off crosses. So you're paying more attention.
Yeah.
If you're paying more attention to a specific thing that's happening on the pitch, you're gonna see more. It's like if you have a car in your head, you always see loads of cars, loads of those cars, and then if you think of a different car, you see loads of those cars, and you're there going, is it just me? But it's not. It's because you're paying more attention to what you're looking at. So I didn't look again. As I said, the one thing that I thought was decent enough was that he does give us an out ball.
Yeah,
like when Bogdan, who's in goal, needed to kick the ball, he was able to kick.
You've been dying to go there for 7 minutes. You've been dying to mention Bogdan for the whole time the pod's been going.
All I know is that the goal that we conceded, it somehow went through his hand. When they showed the shot from beyond the goal, he's diving out his hands in the way of the ball. Next minute, the ball has gone through his hand and in the net. I was like, what? Well, it was very Brad Jones.
We agree before that it was a Brad Jones, he's a hologram.
Very much a holographic hand. It didn't stop the ball. But, it does give them at least, if you're under the cosh, and we weren't under the cosh against Swindon, but if they needed to play a ball. If they needed to play a ball or whatever, like, he is an option. He's a realistic option to play it up to.
But don't forget, like, do you remember, like, under Rafa, we had Ryan and Gall and Torres. And Ryan used to fucking fire the ball out, throw it to the halfway line.
Yep.
And Benteke would have no problem. I know he's not that prolific type of player that Torres was at the time. But Benteke can get on the ball and keep it. And you have so many good attacking players that.
The only problem is you have no chance of that out ball from Mignolet. <Yeah. laughs> The odd one might accidentally hit Benteke.
He's too busy clapping. Mignolet claps a lot. But
he
the point is, we are a counter-attacking team when we're at our best.
Yeah.
We don't counter-attack ugly. We counter-attack quite fucking
sexy.
Beautifully at times. So we're a team, or smashing long ball from Lovren or whoever Henderson's got a pass in him and Inland's got a pass, so the ball gets released early from the goalkeeper along the ground and get Benteke away.
If you think of the tactic it employed last year, where they just put Fellaini on sort of diagonal crossfield ball to his chest, not to his head, so you weren't hanging it up where it was a 50-50,
massively effective.
It was just to play Benteke is ideal for doing that, do you know what I mean? And I don't mean, I'm not talking about smashing long balls. You can take a ball just inside their half,
clip it,
play a diagonal across to his chest, and you've got the likes of Coutinho running off him, Firmino running off him, even without his own goal threat. It gives us another option. It allows us to switch play a lot quicker than
they destroyed us at Anfield with that.
His technique is fantastic as well. I mean, that's the other thing that really surprised me, was even with his goal and a couple of other balls that came into him, his first touch was excellent.
He's a great touch for a big lad.
But he's actually just got great touch. Whereas Carroll, you'd fire it at him and it could go anywhere.
He's
got loads of confidence in his own ability with his feet, because he does hang on to the ball. Like, if Villa fans had any complaints, it was the fact that he held on to it for a bit too long.
Yeah.
So.
And that's probably what your best player or one of your best players gets away with. Whereas at Liverpool, he'll have the Coutinhos and whoever else demanding it off him that little bit quicker. Yeah. So that'll probably improve.
And only a small thing, but his celebration after the goal was pretty understated. If anyone else scores that goal, you go fucking mad. It's your debut for Liverpool, right? You've just scored this goal, and he kind of celebrated it, say, "Yeah, I do it all the time."
Yeah,
like you should expect
I love
that
the fact
regularly.
That he's not giving it to "I played for Liverpool on fucking the PlayStation" or I have a tattoo on my arse or whatever else. You know what I mean? I signed because I'm getting a shitload of money and they're a better club than I played for, and I'm going to score some fucking goals. And
so we're all aligned on Benteke's start. And there are a couple of other selection dilemmas, should we say? We were talking about it before the pod. There's rumours who's going to start. So one of the rumours, Andy, is that Joe Gomez starts ahead of Moreno. So talk to me about your thoughts about that.
Well, I think this is a fella who's gone from last year he was in Charlton kind of youth setup, and he broke into the Charlton team, played about 20 games or something like that. Now he's going to be starting in the Premier League for Liverpool. Like, it doesn't really add up. Like, I mean, I know it can happen, but for me, I'd be going back to Moreno. He has more experience. Joe Gomez could still play a huge part in this season. He looks like a lovely player, but to be getting carried away based on playing a lot of shit teams, I know his performances have been good, I've seen some of them, but it doesn't matter. I don't care. Like, Joe Gomez should be on the bench and Moreno in the team.
Steve-O, Rodgers rewarding a player that's done well in pre-season, or getting a little bit carried away over a young promising player?
No, listen, I haven't seen anything from Gomez so far that I'd be worried about him playing against Stoke. Mm-hmm. And you look at another young English defender in John Stones, who 18 months ago mm-hmm. was playing for Barnsley. You know what I mean? And he signs for £3 million, and even Everton fans were going, what a fucking waste of money. We're not buying fucking any players, and we buy this shitbag for £3 million. And you know what I mean? 18 months later, there's talk of a £30 million bid. Now, I'm not saying that's the natural progression for Gomez, obviously, but what I'm saying is sometimes you have to trust that what you see in front of you is what you're getting. And if he's performed better than Moreno, and he's probably played more than Moreno over pre-season, why not bang him in? Give the lad a chance. If he fucks up, fair enough, take him out.
I'd be all for giving the fella a chance. If he came, if Moreno was having a few stinkers and he came and he was injured and he started to prove himself in the league, Premier League games, you know, then you can say that's got credibility.
Mm.
But there's no credibility for playing well against shit.
Hey, listen, he played against the Thai All-Stars.
Now, Phil, Rodgers loves a romantic narrative. You know, he loves the story maybe of this young kid coming in and just proving everyone wrong. What are you thinking? Are you thinking this is, if he starts, and we don't know whether he's going to start, is this, he's fitter than Moreno right now? Maybe Moreno isn't quite ready. Is it a tactical thing? Does he want to go to a more defensive flat back four, as we, you know, we've talked about? Or is it, again, is the manager seeing something that we're not here?
I think he's probably noticed that he hasn't been picked on an Uber board yet. So he's probably said, fuck that. You know?
Yeah. It's guaranteed to give you some fucking points.
If Coutinho wasn't so good and had a personalised one, he'd definitely be training in the rejects.
Coutinho
as well.
Goes around in one of them all the time.
Just can't see it.
He plays on
just
one of them.
No, but, you know, I think the Gomez thing is interesting. I think there's a lot of potential reasons why he may favour Gomez over Moreno for this particular match. Mm-hmm. If you're starting Lovren, let's say, right? I think Gomez is a stronger defensive fullback than Moreno is.
Yeah.
I think he's better positionally than Moreno is. So you only have to deal with two lads in the centre who don't know where to be.
Well, Moreno is suspect for the goal now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? But, to be fair to say that.
It is. It is. But like what I'm saying is, I think there could be a line of thought that says this fella's done very well for us in pre-season. We weren't expecting him to be that good. And he seems to be so composed and so positionally aware and strong in terms of what he's doing. That at the moment we still feel that Moreno gives us a better attacking option, but we're going to Britannia, they're going to Stoke on the fourth day of the season. We lost here 6-1. I want at least one sort of more defensive style fullback, because if we're going to play Klein on the other side, he's going to want to bomb forward and be part of the attack because it's in his makeup. And I don't have an issue with it.
And I think if we'll come on to talk about the midfield now, and that might explain perhaps why we're being a little bit more defensive. But again, Andy, against Helsinki, he played a midfield three of Milner, Henderson and Coutinho, right? So no Allen, no Lucas, no Emerson, no traditional kind of holding player in there, which I thought was a very attacking move. It reminded me of when we played the Diamond and suddenly you're playing Coutinho in one of those midfield roles. You know, how are you reading that? Could that maybe suggest that he needs his defence to be more defensive because he's going to have such an attack in midfield?
Yeah, well, it could be just the fact that the squad was kind of split up 50-50, so it could be a bit of that. There's certain players he wants to play and he's adapted the shape. But no, I mean, Coutinho...
Do you think Lucas starts against Stoke?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think that midfield starts?
I think Henderson and Milner start. And ahead of them, then you've got a selection of three of four or five players.
Yeah, so there's no hold that you think against Stoke.
No, I think Henderson and Milner look like they can complement each other quite well. They're both kind of jack of all trades, really. And I don't think you need a defensive midfielder that just defends. You know, for the whole of midfield duo, you know.
And Steve-O, playing Henderson and Milner, I mean, it was interesting watching Milner. He was in the box more than Lallana.
Well, he has been, yeah. Right? I've loved that most about him. Yeah. And I was talking to Damo about it as well and saying it's because, yet again, probably someone that myself and him were sceptical about signing beforehand.
Yeah.
And I've loved the fact that he wants to get on the end of things. And it's something that we didn't have from midfield last season. When I say midfield, I mean our central midfielders. Like, you look at the attacking threat that Milner has been in pre-season compared to Allen since he joined the club.
Yeah.
The only time I can remember Allen, in off the top of my head, ever being close to scoring a goal was in the derby. You know,
apart from when he actually scored, you mean?
Yeah, but what I mean is in terms of being an attacking threat getting on the end of
that
something.
That sort of a rising player, like,
you know.
Yeah. Because Milner will offer what, say, Lampard did for so long for Chelsea.
Yeah, probably not as good.
No.
Because he gives you more in the middle of the park. But what I'm saying is, you could be looking at 8-9 goals a season off Milner from coming in like that. That's a massive contribution from replacing Lucas or Allen. who are going to give you zero goals this season.
So just on that point,
on the Milner thing, isn't it very much that he's like a 75% Steven Gerrard at 28? Whereas Gerrard, when he was playing for us, it was only a 50% Steven Gerrard when he was 28 for the last two or three seasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what Milner's been doing is a form of what Gerrard had done for many years for us, arriving into the box and scoring goals. He's not at the same level as Gerrard was when he was at his best. But what he's given us, again, is a real sort of engine in midfield.
Now, it's definitely a lift on what we've done.
I think he's different to Gerrard. I got to be honest, I think every preseason game I've watched, I've said it on Twitter, I thought Milner was the best player in the park. Mm. He's the smartest player in the park. He never loses the ball. His passing is great. Positionally, he's great. He's an attacking threat. But I just want to bring it back to what you were saying about getting 9 goals out of Milner, because we'd probably expect something similar out of Henderson, right? So, but it does prompt, if I was being pessimistic, I would say, well, you're playing two guys as your defensive shield, right?
Yeah.
Who want to score 20 goals between them.
Yeah.
Is that a risk against teams?
Yeah, I think it is. And obviously for me, I would prefer to see Chan, Milner and Henderson. I've no idea how it would work, but I would love to see it. I would love to see it and just be either proved right or wrong as to that being the best three in there. But I think what we'll probably find is that they have to work between them. The old sort of one stays, one goes. You know, they have to operate that way, especially if Coutinho is going to be the third man in there.
But you're not advocating Lucas.
No.
Say
no,
Shan isn't fit, because I don't think he's 100% fit. Emma Shan looks like he needs game time. But
you know, the only way he's going to get that game time is to go in there. So I'd rather see him get 70 minutes against Stoke and us hopefully have a good part of the game wrapped up. I'm not saying Stoke are going to be by any means a pushover, but I'd prefer to see him get 70 minutes and then either play with the two lads dropping in and somebody else coming on for him, or even Lucas coming in.
Well, I suggest pushing Coutinho forward. So let me come back when we talk about the forward line. So, Phil, just to finish up with you on the midfield then. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you're not advocating Lucas should start, right? Against Stoke now, thinking what they did to us last season, thinking about... you know, the fact that our midfield does want to push forward, does want to score goals.
I don't mean to cut across you, but I think what Stoke did to us last season was more to do with us than it was to them. You know what I mean? So I don't see that happening. We play them another 50 times. That result doesn't replicate itself.
No, but they are, I mean, to be fair, under Pulis and Hughes, they have a tremendous home record, right? They're a very difficult side to beat at the Britannia, right? So, first game of the season, anything can happen. I know, I'm just wondering, to bring it back to Phil, whether, you know, you'd go a bit more cautious in terms of the midfield selection.
No, I'm with Steve. If I was bringing one player in, it'd be Chan into that midfield, because I think it removes the need for having to have a screen or a DM. I think with the three of them, ideally, you'd like to see them all in a midfield where they all cover each other. So if say, Chan goes on a maraud up the pitch and Milner's going with him, then Henderson stays at home. Or if Henderson and Milner have gone, Chan is staying there to cover the defence. I think there's very much, in terms of the capabilities and the style of the players, they're all complementary and would work perfectly in front of that. You'd normally maybe say to Chan, listen, you hang back a bit more. We want you to go on those bursting runs throughout the game as well, because that will open teams up. Teams will not be expecting him to and they won't be able to, like, what are you going to do, put a man marker on the defensive midfield? If you do, then you're freeing up space for Henderson and Milner to operate in. So, like, you know, it's the power as well. The one thing that Chan brings to that midfield is he brings incredible power. You know, he's such a physical player. You know,
he brushes players away from him.
He brushes players over, like, do you know what I mean? And that's the one thing that, when I'm looking at him, and you've got Henderson and Milner, and I'm not saying they're shrinking violets either, right? But the one thing that Stoke is, and even when I was watching them at the weekend, they were still overly physical in that midfield. And as much as I love Coutinho, when I watched them play in the way they were set up in Helsinki, like, nominally either Milner or Henderson was staying at home and Coutinho was dropping back in, and it was sort of like one was playing as the one behind two of them. I'm just wondering, could they just get a Coutinho maybe and try physically dominate him early doors?
I think the physicality argument is the only reason why I'd play Charlotte. I wouldn't play him personally. First of all, I don't think we've seen any evidence that he can play defensive midfield player for us, right? Even when he plays, he looks to bomb forward. Same for Germany under 21. But I do get the physicality thing. I think there's an argument. But maybe that's an option off the bench. If we are getting squeezed, if we are getting pushed, I hope that's the change he makes rather than bringing Lucas in. So we're going to go back a little bit now. We're going to talk about the defence again. And the Republican presidential debate is tomorrow. But if you want to get real bile and bullshit, let's talk about Lovren versus Sacco, lads, all right? So...
Let me open.
Let you open.
Let me open on this.
Come on.
Right? How fucking dare they? I know, seriously. I think the bigger thing for me is Skirtle. I would rather see Lovren and Sacco start the next 15 games as a two than have Skirtle in the team. Because I honestly think they're a better partnership than Skirtle with either Lovren or Sacco. I think we've seen over the last two or three seasons, no matter who Skirtle is paired with outside of Agar, it doesn't work in a two.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting about Skirtle is that he's conned every manager. Benitez dropped Agger for him and played Skirtle with Carragher.
And put Skirtle across.
And put Skirtle, yeah, move Skirtle across. So, Steve, who's starting? Who should start?
Who's starting is, in my mind, is Skirtle and Lovren.
Okay. Who would you start?
It's a tough one. You know, it really is. Like, I really hoped that we'd seen a different Lovren than the one we bought. And I don't think we have. Because pre-season's kind of told me that he's just as fucking bad as he was last season. And I really didn't want him to be. I really wanted him to prove people wrong and come out of his shell this season. But like Phil said, it's probably not a bad shout. I don't know. We used to watch Skirtle alongside different people and say he's a fucking liability there for the other people.
Yeah.
Because if you are, you know, trying to play in a certain way, if he's paying no attention to that whatsoever, then it fucks the whole back four up.
Well, I'm going to come to Andy in a minute, but this is where my train of thought goes, is that I think the way Skirtle defends makes the person that defends next to him just look terrible.
Yeah.
So Lovren wants to be a front foot proactive defender. I actually saw the Sacco, and Skirtle drags the whole thing back and they just look ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, Andy,
and they look so far cut out of shape.
There is a school of thought, Andy, right, that, say, the difference between us conceding 50 goals and 20 goals during this season is you simply replace Lovren with Sacco. That Sacco is that good, right? That
he's three defenders.
You just make that change and that is such a significant impact on our defence that it will transform our season. I don't buy into it. Where are you on that? Is it such a gap between Lovren and Sacco that it's...
Well, I don't know. I'd like to see the statistics on when either of them plays to see does that actually happen. Lover makes very, very obvious mistakes.
Yeah.
And I would like to play Sacco, obviously. But I do have to appreciate the fact that there's stuff we just don't know as fans. We don't see them in training. We don't see their attitudes. We don't hear the conversations that take place. We don't really know what their injury kind of, you know, the likelihood of them getting injuries or what's going to happen is. I think any team that's going to succeed needs a defensive pair and centre-backs more than anything throughout the whole team. It's one place you just cannot rotate. I think he feels by maybe playing Sacco there, he's going to be forced into rotation, that Sacco's going to let him down and get injured.
Yeah.
So that's where the problem lies. And there might be other things as well. Maybe they just don't get on and maybe he feels that Sacco's not listening to him or something like that. And he just wants a shot.
Well,
out
of the last 76 league games, so the last two seasons, Sacco has been injured for 42.
Yeah. Right. See, that's
over 50% of the games.
I mean, we loved Agar. Like, I mean, I loved him, and I just always felt that every season you were asking the question, should we just sell him now? Because if there was any sort of money available for Agar, it was a hell of a lot better than having an injured player.
Yeah,
you know,
in the end, we got 4
player.
Quid and a Kit Kat for him. Yeah,
like, it's just unfortunate that Sacco's
for me, leader. There's no argument. Sacco's a better defender than Lovren, right? But I think the flaw here, and I genuinely think the flaw here is Skirtle. I think we've, like, every, as you said, every manager has played Skirtle in the defence, right? And we haven't had an immense defensive record, right? Since Benitez left, we haven't had an immense defensive record. I think it's time to, well, I thought last season was the time to do it, and I said it at the time. Yeah. When Sacco and Lovren played at Spurs that day, I thought there was at least the signs of potentially a partnership, because at least both defenders, as you said, wanted to play with the same style of football.
On the front foot.
Yeah, and they both wanted to do it. So the mistakes that were being made was because they were trying to play on the front foot. Now, I've no issue with that because they were trying to bet in. But if you don't bet a partnership in, going back to Andy's point, if you don't bet a partnership in over the long term or over 10, 15 games, they're never going to be able to form a partnership, right? And there's this sort of train of thought now that says, oh, well, one's a left centre-back, the other's a left centre-back. So we're taking, you know...
But Lovren played right side.
But we played Kolo Touré, who's primarily a right centre back, at left centre back as well, right? Skirtle has played.
I think the left centre back thing has been a thing that Liverpool fans have kind of become obsessed about.
It's just
this thing that
there
you can
is,
only play
there
one
is
side.
There is certain players who just cannot fucking function once they're put out of their comfort zone. But
most of them aren't.
Yeah. You know, most of them will have grown up playing different sides. Like it's not, you don't always get your way as a player. And you're a fucking centre back. You're a centre back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Is there one part whereby we're just all wrong, and Skirtle's actually not that bad a defender? Because if you look at it, Benitez, every one of us would agree, was a good defensive coach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I mean? Regardless of whether we liked the way the football was played or not, he was a good defensive coach.
Yeah.
And he picked him regularly.
But I think Benitez played a different style, right? So I think Skrtel is a very good, deep lying defender. Yeah. So if you're playing with a game in front of you, you're on your 18-yard line. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He wins his one-to-one battles. He does read the game pretty well. He makes good recovery tackles, wins his headers. I think he's that.
It's when you play 30 yards for
it's when
forward.
You want to move their line forward.
Like, you know, there's not an awful lot wrong with that. It takes a very special centre-back to be able to play like that, you know. And I don't think any of them are that special. Like, there's people that love Sacco so fucking much that they fall out with the whole club.
They believe he's Maldini.
I've genuinely seen tweets saying if Sacco's name is not on the team sheet, the Roger should get sacked.
A lot of the reputation on Sacco is actually
based on his performances in a back three, not in a back two, because actually when Sacco played in a back two with Skrtel in the tail end of our title season, he was shocking. That's a bad, they were bad in the two together. It's marginal.
But again,
it's Skrtel,
the common denominator.
I agree.
I was looking at, the gas thing was when I was looking at the Swindon game, I was looking at Jordan Williams at playing centre back for Swindon, and he's gone on loan to them. Like, he's our player. And I was thinking to myself, Jesus, there's a young fella now. I was thinking to myself, he's got a real potential to come through as a defensive midfielder. Big, powerful when he played in that game for us and has a pass and was able to read the game. And then he was sitting there as a centre-back and saying, Jesus, that's a fella now who can play centre-back. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And he was reading the game well. He handled Benteke for most of that match really, really well. And you're saying to yourself, I know he's putting in extra effort because he wants to show that
it's not a bad sign that he's going to go there and get football for the season. They actually played some decent football, and that's a good sign for us because you want to be sending your players to clubs that are going to play in a similar fashion.
And that sort of goes back to, like, I'm at the stage now with the centre-backs where I genuinely think Sacco is a step up to the centre-backs we have. However, you can put any really good centre-back in with a poor centre-back and their performance level will come down.
Yeah.
And that's happened right the way across all teams.
Like, so I think that, you know, my view on it is that who we play at centre-back is not going to dictate our season. What's going to dictate our season is who we play up front. So let's segue into that front three.
Well, I think if we have a partnership at the back, it will dictate, you know. Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing about Sacco is that, and I've heard this argument, and people are making out that there's no logic to playing Lovren. But actually there is, because if you spend all pre-season building a relationship between Skrtel and Sacco, right, and that's your centre-back partnership for the start of the season, you've done all this work on him. Given Sacco's injury record, he's going to be injured within 5 games.
Yeah.
And then you've got to take this shell of Lovren, who's had no game time.
Yeah.
His confidence is gone. He's had no time to work on anything. And you're putting him in for basically half a season.
Is that the Skrtel argument? Of all the centre-backs, he's the least injury-prone.
Well,
Lovren was out injured for a long time last season. Well, Sacco was out injured for a long time.
It's definitely a bad part of it.
The key to good defending is it's using the same personnel all the time. You know, you can chop around your full-backs depending on who you're playing. But fullback is a bit of a fraud position. So
I'm just
fullback. It's not a real position.
It's
people who can't play
fullbacks.
Fullbacks are good footballers who have been removed from somewhere else in the pitch. And you know.
So speaking of good footballers, Andy, we're agreeing that Benteke is going to play up front.
Yeah.
Who's playing with him for you against Stoke? So we've had Jordan Ibe, we've had Lallana, we've had Firmino, we've had Markovic, all things. Origi, Coutinho. It's a good thing.
Like, I mean, that we're looking at sort of 6 or 7 players that fans can debate over who should play and who shouldn't play. Not an awful lot of people like Lallana, and they want to see Firmino in, they want to see Coutinho in, they want to see, you know, they want to see their favourites. Someone's going to have to be left out.
Yeah.
Now, like, if it was my choice, I'd like to see Coutinho and Firmino play and probably Benteke. That's probably what I'd go for because I like the players.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's not a hell of a lot of difference by taking one out and putting the other in, especially the fact that Firmino hasn't had a...
Yeah, I think Lallana goes in there for Firmino, and that probably is your front...
I think it's Lallana, Ibe and Coutinho will be the three that's there.
But there is the belief out there that we may play 4-3-3.
I think we will.
But two of them players have to lose him because Benteke's starting.
Yeah,
and then there's other people saying that Ings is going to play.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be so upset to see Ings play. Actually, if we go 4-3-3,
if Ings and Benteke play, you've got a choice of four players.
You've either got Lallana or Ibe. You've only got one of those two.
Because you're going to drop Coutinho into that three. of Milner.
So for the sake of this discussion, Henderson and Coutinho.
Yeah.
And then you'll have
you'll have Ives and Ings and Benteke. Yeah. Or Lallana, Ings and Benteke.
So let's say Coutinho's in midfield, just for the sake of the argument, right? Yeah. So your choice is three out of four, really, right? You're playing Ings, Benteke, Ibe, or Lallana for the front three positions. Who's your three out of that four? Assuming Firmino's not fit, because I don't think he's going to be.
Including Benteke.
So Benteke's going to start.
Right.
So you've got two out of the remaining three.
Oh, like it's... And Coutinho's playing in midfield.
Coutinho's in midfield.
So Firmino.
You'd start Firmino?
Yeah, yeah. Fucking, I'm dying to see this.
That's only because you didn't watch this win the match.
No, but I mean, like this in a competitive game, and he's going to be like, geez, he better play a huge part in this team this year. So I'm dying to see him get going. And so it'll be him, obviously. And then, I mean, I think
I'd get the nod over Lallana for you.
Or Markovic, you know. I'd like to see a bit more Markovic than I would Lallana. I've nothing against Lallana. I like him. I like him a hell of a lot more than most people. I think he's a nice player to watch. But I think Markovic long term has a brighter future in football.
Steve-o, so assuming Benteke starts, who are you playing with? Now, I think it's a little bit of who you want and who's realistic.
So realistically, I would probably be going with Ibe and Ings.
Okay.
In that front three. I don't think Ing starts over Lallana though, even if he goes with that front three. So I think you're looking at Benteke, Lallana.
Yeah.
But you know, Markovic was disappointing against Swindon.
I thought he was too.
You know, he lost a lot of the ball.
His passing was terrible.
Yeah, his passing was poor. He lost the ball just in terms of looking clumsy on it. And I was someone who really sang his praises last season and was really pissed off when he got made a scapegoat in that Arsenal match. But against Swindon, he just looked poor. He did not do anything a week away from kickoff.
His passing, you know, we complain about Lallana, right? Lallana always takes a touch too much, but Markovic's passing is always a foot behind where it needs to be.
That's
what happened at Arsenal. His pass is a foot ahead or foot away from where it's meant to be.
Yeah.
And it was the same on Sunday. I was really frustrated with
him. I think if he's going to play, he has to play further forward.
Yeah.
I think that's where you're going to get the best out of him. He has the pace and he has a bit of trickery about him to cause teams problems, not only to keep them pushed back because of his pace and his ability to get in behind, but also just because he has the beating of a player, which I don't necessarily think Lallana has. And when I say he clearly is a skillful player, but to go past the player and then get on past them, I don't think he has.
I think it's easier to see where Ibe goes next than it is where Markovic goes next. Ibe's next step in terms of his progression is pretty obvious, whereas Markovic, I still think we're only seeing 50% of what he might be capable of.
I was pissed off with Ibe the other day watching him, even though people were saying he had had a brilliant match. I thought his end product was terrible, but he came out and said that himself after the game.
So Phil, Benteke starts. Who are you? Who would you pick, and who do you think you pick? Well, you know who he's gonna. I know who you think.
I think it's cast iron. It'll be Coutinho, Ibe, and Lallana.
Yeah.
Now,
would you change that if it was you?
Yeah.
And what would you do?
I wouldn't have Lallana in the team.
Well, okay.
I'd play a sheep. I'd play a traffic cone. I genuinely just thought he's not my cup of tea.
You don't think he's a very
slows
good
it down. I think what we're going to be really good at this year is fast attack and play. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's a fast attacker. And especially if he's on the left-hand side and he's up against Johnson, he's not the type of player who'll give fucking Johnson any problems. He's too lightweight. Mm.
Don't think he's particularly slow on the ball, though. Like, you know, he
slows it down, though. Turns too many times, doesn't play quick
passes. His style of play,
I think Lallana's got four or five games at the start of the season where he's going to start.
My disappointment is that, you know, is around Markovic. Ideally, in this game, if you're going 4-2-3-1, right, for setting this up, and you've got fucking the man mountain that's now Glenn Johnson at right back for them, you'd be looking to exploit that space that every team exploited against us, which is just behind Johnson, because if you get him in there with pace, Johnson won't even bother.
I'd be putting Ibe nearly there. He has the physicality and the pace
That's what I'm saying. My frustration with Markovic is that if he was in form and he'd been played a bit more through pre-season, there's potential that you'd start him there so he could exploit that space with
look, I know you hate Johnson, but we should remember Stoke's left back is Jeff Cameron, right? So it's not like you got fucking Jody Alba on one side and Glenn Johnson on the other. Right? Yeah, so wherever I plays, he's playing against a fucking shit fullback.
But I just think that's a pair of, like, we know how to exploit that space because we've had to watch
what you're saying is
fucking years.
A Lallana type player doesn't exploit that, whereas an Ibe type player won't mark him.
And even potentially Firmino, because he's just intelligent. Like, the one thing that Johnson couldn't handle when he was with us was when he was up against a player with any type of trickery, you do one trick and you're past him. Even if you only one trick, you're past him.
Even if you repeated that trick for 90 minutes every time.
But it's like, and that's my only problem with starting Lallana against. But he will start. If I was starting him, I'd probably like to see I'd like to see a 4-3-3. I'd like to see Chan, Henderson and Milner midfield, and I'd be starting Coutinho. And I'd probably, for this game, maybe start with two up front. Just to give them something different to think about, because when you see Milner playing in that sort of role, he's not afraid to go wide and give support. And, you know, Ings, Ibe and Benteke, you know, with the three behind them, they won't know where to pick those lads up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They can just float. Ings will float around. Fucking Ibe will just go tearing down the line against lads, and then you have Benteke there to accommodate Milner and Henderson or Chan even coming into the box.
Yeah, I mean, people are talking about this being a big season for Lallana. My own personal view on it is it's five games, because by the time the five games are done, Sturridge is back and Firmino's fit, and then Lallana doesn't get in that side. He's got to, if he doesn't perform in the first five games, he's not in the starting 11. But if he's not in the starting 11 for another season, if he's in and out, if he's not getting games, I think it goes downhill.
Yeah,
for
the
him
worrying thing for Lallana.
He's a good squad player.
Yeah, no, he is a good squad player, and you're never going to be pissed off. I'd nearly be sort of a little bit disappointed if he is the nailed on starter. But if he's the player that comes in for somebody for a game or two or whatever, or comes in and does well and keeps his place.
Well,
fine.
My point is, he's in the nailed on starter now, right?
Yeah,
and the only way. He's got to be good enough
to keep Firmino and
Sturridge
out.
Sturridge comes back and it isn't you straight back in, right? Yeah. He's got to be that good.
You hope.
Right. But if he's not, what I'm saying is, I don't think Lallana is good as a squad player. I think he needs to play. And if he's not playing games, we saw this last season, when it stopped start with him, he just doesn't perform.
Similar to Joe Allen.
A bit like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I think it's a big five games.
Yeah,
for
Lallana. The problem for him probably is that he didn't look in any way impressive in Europe last season. No, not that any of our players did.
Well, it's because he's a very good Premier League player, but not good in the Champions League.
Yes,
to Phil.
As Phil has said. So my worry for him is that you're looking at possibly giving him games in the Europa if he's lost his place in the starting 11, and he may still struggle there, you know.
All right, so we're going to move it forward. I was going to ask if anyone has seen Stoke in pre-season. Seeing as you haven't seen Liverpool in pre-season, I know Phil watched Stoke against
Stoke.
FC Cologne, right, just
FC
to get
Cologne
it.
FC Cologne last weekend.
Give us your 30-second kind of view on Stoke.
Johnson looks like Ashley Williams' twin brother. I swear to God, he's gone so big and he's let his hair grow out. I, honestly, when I was watching it, I thought it was Ashley Williams, and he was moving with that same level of pace as him as well. Cologne destroyed them. They basically just exploited the lack of pace in the side. Now, whether that's close to their starting lineup or not, I don't know. But like, they had Van Hinkel playing, they had Joss Lewis playing, they had most of the new signings playing. Peters was playing left back, and they had Johnson at right back. Mm. And I was thinking to myself, if we can exploit their pace, because they'll come on to us. It's the Britannia. They'll want to try win the game or whatever. Then we can get at them. But it needs us being quick through the phases from defence to attack. We can't, like, this slow type of idea of build up will just allow them to reset themselves, and it'll be hard for us to break them down.
Okay, so looking at our first five games, is what I want to start to do is get a bit of a view of how you think the first five games are going to go, and then move into kind of predictions for the season as a whole, right? So now we may as well put our balls on the line and say how we think it's going to go. So the first five games, just for those of you who might not know, Stoke away, Bournemouth at home, Arsenal away, West Ham at home, United away. All right, so pretty tough first five games.
Tough fight. Even Bournemouth, you just don't know what to expect from them, you know. And it's that newly promoted club that makes it difficult, you know. Mm. Who have Bournemouth got first game of the season? Anybody know?
No.
I think it could be Swansea. I'm not
sure. Swansea have Chelsea.
Check the internet.
I think it might be Everton. Is it Everton? I think.
Check the internet.
Anyway,
find out now.
So while you're looking at that, Andy, first five games there for Liverpool. How do you see them going? What's your feeling? Not predictions for the season yet, just the first five games.
Yeah, well, obviously, Stoke is going to be difficult. I don't think we lose. I think we can beat them, but a draw wouldn't be a horrific result or anything like that. Then you're going to have to beat Bournemouth. It's a poxy time to play in a newly promoted team, especially a team like Bournemouth. It's been a long, long time, you know, and to play at this level. So they're going to be, or it's the first time ever
Yeah. I mean, they're going to be buzzing. It's like, you know, you can see them towards the end of the season or around Christmas time just getting battered by everyone. But at the start, they're going to be have a point to prove, and that's the last thing we want, because it's similar to playing in the FA Cup where teams just raise their game. So you're going to see a Bomber team that's going to raise their game a lot. Arsenal away. I think Arsenal are going to be brilliant this year, so that's going to be fucking very difficult. West Ham home, have to beat them. And then United away. Just a funny feeling about United, like, and quite frightened about them
I think that they got four games, then the international break, then United away, and after apparently today Sturridge is saying that he might be fit for that game.
Yeah.
So
be interesting to see how the other four games go before, like, just introducing Sturridge back. Like, hopefully it's not like last season where you're just watching these fixtures and the concentration is getting the likes of Sturridge back for it, especially. Hopefully we can just bring Sturridge back fucking nicely. You know, if Liverpool are beating teams, or, you know, if they pick up three wins and a draw then against Arsenal away, going into the United game, I'd be sticking with what you've had.
So, Phil, bear in mind you're a 3 out of 10 in terms of excitement. I'm almost afraid to ask you this question, but, you know, going into the United away game, what do you think we're looking do you think we're doing?
Parking my incredible optimistic level that I'm at the moment. Yeah. If we want top four, I think we need 10 from points from the first 15.
Okay.
Right. I think we
need 3 wins and a draw.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, genuinely, because I think looking at that fixture list that sets out, we have to be beating Stoke, Bournemouth and West Ham.
Yeah.
And then getting a point out of the Arsenal away and United away is actually not as bad a return for this stage of the season. Because if you're going in out 15 points, you're going in with 10, you're going to be thereabouts in the top four.
Yeah,
already, and you don't
that's
want
a serious ratio there, you know.
No, but
you're talking about trying to pick up points against Arsenal away and United away. Every team in the league is going to struggle with them two fixtures.
Andy, I know, but I'm saying to you, given the task that's in front of us, this isn't a season coming off the back of a World Cup or European Championships, right? Mm-hmm. So, I think the points level for fourth is going to be higher than what it was last year, which was in around the 72 mark. I think you're going to need 75 to 76 points to get a top four this year, and if you want to do that, you need to make a good start. And I'm looking at if I was saying, like, the first 10 games, you're looking to get 20 points on the board.
Yeah, okay.
And that's going back to your 2 points per game ratio to get you to 76 come the end of the season.
Steve-o, how do you see us going into the international break?
Yeah, I would agree with the lads. I just checked there. Bournemouth's game is against Villa home to Villa, first match of the season. So that's probably not a bad one to be able to gauge them on. I'd be expecting 6 points from the first two games. I would, you know, we have to, if we want to seriously challenge top four rather than just scrape our arses through it, they're the games you have to win. Okay. You know what I mean? And you have to be able to go to the Britannia and take 3 points, because Chelsea and Arsenal and City and probably United will. So 6 points from them, I'd be delighted with a point down at Arsenal. Like Andy said, I think they will be quite strong because they haven't bought a lot of players. Mm-hmm. So as we've seen the last few years, the clubs that haven't added huge numbers to their ranks tend to be the ones that at least start off strongest. So you're looking at Chelsea and City.
Just on it, like, I know it's a big ask, but if you think about it, the year that we finished second under Rodgers, we took 11 from the first 15.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm saying to you. Like, I remember coming in after the Swansea, and I can't remember if it was Newcastle or the fifth game, and we were sort of going, we'd had 3 wins on the bounce, then we had 2 draws, and we were feeling deflated after that. We're saying, like, Jesus, our good start's been ruined because we did. But when you look back at it now, 11 from 15 sets you up lovely.
Oh, it does, absolutely.
I mean, my thing is, I think you have to win the first two. I think you've got to go to Stoke and win, and then you've got to beat Bournemouth.
Because then,
and suddenly then you're like 6 from 6, okay.
Tails are up when West Ham come, because West Ham are actually going to be a decent side this first.
And my actual view, I think Benteke is exactly the type of striker Arsenal won't want to play against.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing that's making me go, we could have a chance there. Okay, so moving away from
just one thing on Stoke. I think it's a long time since we've had a player who's going to be well able to handle the likes of Shawcross. And Hoot's not there, is he?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know who their two centre-halves, because Hoot's gone. And so whoever they're going to have, but they're going to have big physical centre-halves. It's what it's what they play most of the time. And it's going to be nice for us to actually be able to impose a game on them.
Until Jonathan Walters eats Joe Gomez.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. So, predictions then on a couple of things. First of all, where are Liverpool going to finish, Andy?
Probably fifth?
Yeah.
Steve-o?
I'm going to be optimistic and say third.
Third? Phil?
That's based on Sturridge coming back and not being fucked.
It's too many variables for me to actually have a realistic view on where we're going to finish at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's why it's a prediction. So just give us a prediction.
We're not asking you to fucking crystal ball it there.
It's not a risk assessment.
For fuck's sake. Fifth or sixth.
I think, like, Steve, you're being like major optimistic, like, yeah, on the toward. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, I thought this was the optimistic pod tonight.
Yeah, it is.
No, like, no, don't get me wrong. If Trev was here, I'd be saying 50.
If I was, like, you know, optimistic, sticking on the blinders here and say we're going to win the league. But unfortunately, without seeing United playing, City playing, you know, this season, Chelsea, and seeing which of these teams is actually manageable to get past. Because at the moment, I just can't actually realistically say that we will definitely get past one of them. I think the best chance probably, looking at the squads, you know what I mean, would be probably City, because I think they could have a really poor
season. I think City and United. I think everybody's looked
at... United have got a fantastic midfield now. Like.
But they don't have a fantastic defence, and they've got one striker.
Their boy is striker.
So I think...
But I'm going to go with you.
So as it stands, I think we'll finish fourth, possibly third, because Sturridge, Benteke and Firmino is a better front line than anyone other than the City.
Mm. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I would look at Remy, Falcao and Costa and say, because yeah, they have that
you'd
goal,
be wrong. So anyway.
Well, we'll see, because I think Falcao will actually have a decent season with Chelsea this season.
Based on, okay, who's winning the league, Andy?
Probably Chelsea.
Chelsea.
Yeah.
Steve-o?
Yeah, I'd agree. It's hard to look past them.
If we can get 12 points from the first 15, we will.
If we can finish the season with 96 points, we have an excellent chance.
It's a difficult thing to answer now. Like, I mean, but you're basing everything on just like taking feelings out of the air.
Because
I mean, if you look at Chelsea, like, they were getting hopped off in pre-season, and City were getting beaten as well. Like, you know what I mean? I haven't watched Arsenal or anything. So, like, it's impossible to base it on the pre-season alone. You can only really look at their squads, and we're still fifth best. You know,
you take whatever data point you want. Don't have to go on pre-season. It's just...
I think if you ask this question 5 games to 10 games into the season, then you can start saying, well, I recognise weaknesses.
All right, let's finish up with the remaining bit of business we might have to do as a club. Quick answer. Are we buying anyone else? And who will we sell?
Ilra Mendy.
No, I think it's done. I'd say anything else now would be kind of opportunistic, like as if someone comes in and buys one of our players and we have to go and replace them. So if Inter came in and said, right, fuck it, you know, give us Lucas there, we're gonna have to go and buy again, you know. Or if Balotelli goes, you know, and you get a decent amount of money for him at Barini, you know, there's going to be a few quid there to put into it.
You might look
at something. I don't think we need strikers.
Yeah,
I think we're set up with the strikers we have. We've Sturridge, Benteke, Origi and Ings, right? And if you look for likes, the Origi and Sturridge is more or less the covering one there. So that we're in a better position than we were last year for like, and not as developed, but yeah, you know, in a similar style. So it's really, for me, it's only who can we add to the midfield, because neither Allen or Lucas are good enough if we want to be top four. So it's you know, who are you going to add? Who's going to be another stronger midfielder than the two of them? And yeah, what style of midfielder you're going
for?
I
know we skipped past the preseason
right
games,
but
your man Pedro is very good.
Who?
The young boy, Pedro.
Oh,
I thought Teixeira was very good when he came on against Swindon as well.
I tell you, there's a couple of good... that's why I don't think we'll buy a midfielder, because I actually think that
the only likely one would be that if Moreno goes somewhere, because I think he'd be eaten up back in Spain by Valencia or somebody like that, right? If the price was right, that we might go and sign a left back.
Yeah.
And I think the only credible link we've seen has been to Lucas Digne.
Yeah.
At PSG. And I genuinely think that's the only credible signing that we'll probably make, but I don't think we make it. I think
Moreno stays.
What about this link with your man Adam? Is it Ferrari?
They've come out and said it's made up. Yeah.
As in the players made up.
Yeah.
I don't think he is.
Yeah. No, he was having
can't go wrong calling
someone
that one goal he scored ever.
Yeah,
it was very Suarez like. It didn't make it get excited. It was bouncing off his shins and everything, and then he slotted away like Suarez and turned around and celebrated.
People
like,
take these rumors that are just made up, and they go with them to the point that they're putting them in their team.
Yeah,
and they're saying, you know, I'd probably take Firmino out. I'll probably play him ahead of
because
I think he's quicker. And like, here they are talking about this fucking fantasy player. Like,
yeah,
just,
I don't. Well, I think what's better about it is along Andy's line is like, you know, I remember the Arda Turan. He can't play until January. let's loan Arda Turan. We've just spent fucking 20 odd million on an attacking midfielder. So let's not play Firmino. Let's get Arda Turan.
Just for 4 months to piss Firmino off and then give him back to Barcelona.
So now you're ready to play there.
No, I think we will shift a few. I just saw there tonight that Barini is in, or Liverpool are in talks with Fiorentina. So it'd be nice to see him go, even if it's only for 6-7 million quid, whatever it is. Balotelli goes, Lambert's gone. I don't think any of them need to be replaced. I think
we've done it.
What we asked,
they're not even involved.
No, what we all wanted to see was us do our business early and then worry about getting rid of the shit rather than doing it the other way around. And thankfully, we have done that. So I think we'll see Balotelli and Barini go. Lucas or Allen, I'd be happy enough to see one of them go and a centre midfielder brought in.
Well, we all know who you want.
Yes, Illyria.
But I mean, Barini and Balotelli aside, there's probably only Enrique that we have to get rid of after.
Enrique doesn't exist. Yeah, he doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. I don't think we even need to get rid of him because Balotelli was in around the squad and could be seen as a negative influence. Same with Barini. Enrique's just having a really well-paid holiday.
It's just insane that there's nobody interested in having Enrique kick a ball for him. Nobody has.
Not even promoted clubs.
I got to say something really controversial here. I don't think Enrique is that bad of a footballer to some of the lads that we've sold for fucking mad money.
There was a time I liked Enrique.
Remember him and Suarez had this mental telepathic link where he was pinging
balls.
Get
to Barcelona.
But then we played him as an attacker. He scored.
Scored.
You know, like it's just fucking weird. I don't know. Is he?
But it's interesting. He's I think you made the point about Balotelli before. You know, some of our fans who hate Rodgers, they keep going on about, like, you know,
how badly treated he's been.
Where the fuck are all these people lining up to buy Balotelli? Surely if you were a professional football manager, just looking at that, and it was truly because Rodgers is mismanaging him.
Yeah, and there's all these people out there who have made a living out of football. They're getting paid to be coaching football, managing football teams. They played football, but they just cannot see. But like Twitter, I can see.
Yeah. All seeing eye of Twitter.
If you use him properly, he's amazing.
Yeah.
So there's no manager out there who's saying, you know what, I'm going to buy Balotelli. I'm going to build my whole team around. I'm going to use him properly. I'm going to get the best of him. Because do you know why? It won't happen.
Yeah.
He's a dickhead.
And then that's the thing about Balotelli. It was like, that's the thing when you said it, I was like, fucking hell, there's such a light bulb moment. Where the fuck are all these people coming to buy Balotelli? It, you know, why, we can't get rid of him. No. We can't give him away.
No.
You know, we could fucking sell Lambert. Yeah. We got 4 million for Lambert and we can't sell Balotelli.
We're looking for 10 million euros and some fucker's gone, sorry, team, you want to give me a discount on that?
And it's weird as well, just that on that same point, the way people are up in arms, the way Balotelli's being treated. Like, how bad is Enrique being treated? Balotelli's being treated by fucking royalty.
The only difference is, like, Enrique's probably enjoying it.
Yeah.
I don't even have to train now.
The clubs keep on buying him new segments. Just to send them
off. Just to keep him occupied.
He's you know when you watch a movie and the son of the corporation's president gets sent off somewhere, just keep him out of the way, you know?
Does he even give a bollocks about playing anymore? I don't know.
See the fucking size of him. He looks like a fucking linebacker in an American football. He doesn't even look like he could run.
He doesn't even look like he trains anymore. He's just
goes to the gym.
Just
to
the gym, lifting
weights.
I don't know. He's going to be a WWE wrestler, so I'm going to tell
you that's what he's going to turn up. He used to have a nickname and all that.
El Toro.
El Toro.
I mean, fucking hell.
El Uber Bordo.
He's a lunatic. He's let himself go down the drain like that as well. Because he could have just pushed for a move when he realised he wasn't getting in anymore.
Yeah, so I think Jose Enrique is a perfect way to end this part of the discussion.
Hello, this is Ronnie Whelan here, and you're listening to Tripper Chats. Unbelievable stuff. You ask me anything about Liverpool FC, I will answer it immediately. I'm an encyclopedia. As you know, I played for Liverpool in the 1980s, won many trophies, played with the likes of Kenny Dalglish, Graham Souness. What a team we were. We were just unbelievable. Anyway, Tripper Chats.
Okay, we're going to try something different because we're sick of would you rather questions and WWE questions. So we threw it out to our listeners and got some Tripper
topics. I am stunned nobody used the word Seagal.
Yeah, well, we're sick of talking about Steven Seagal.
In fairness,
fuck.
I think we put that one to bed. Yeah. Now, one of them, Phil, was just ball. And it prompted me to think, do you have some opinions about the new ball that we're using, right?
Yeah, I was going down the route of like a Debs ball or something like that when I was thinking about this. And then I saw a picture of the new fucking Premiership ball. And I hadn't been paying attention to footballs over the summer. Because, like, you know, when you get to a certain age, you don't pay attention to football apparel.
Like 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, the
when you get pubes.
When you discover new women.
Balls.
Then you get get married and you start looking at footballs again. Well, anyway, yeah. But no, it looks like a Marvel fucking supervillain. It's like Spider-Man's head when he was turned into Venom. Like, what is it? It's red and it's poxy. It looks like a cup champion with like marker drawn on it. It's shocking.
It's a bag of shite now. Like, what I find about these new footballs is the colours, and that red is kind of very dark,
yeah,
if you know what I mean. Okay, it's luminous, but it's very colourful, like, you know what I mean? Do you ever find that when someone turns up to Astro with a yeah. ball that's so coloured, it's very hard to fucking play with. I think it's so lit. Like, you just have to play football with a fucking white ball. And when they discovered the tango back in 88 or whatever it was, and then they brought out different variations yeah. of tango to France in 98, it should have all just stopped there.
And just
you finally perfected how a ball should look.
Yep.
So stop.
Yep.
Just stop there. Instead, Nike have just fucking ruined everything. And they've
like
ruined,
always.
They've actually ruined how good a goal is going to look this season.
You know, the same people said that Apple should have stopped at the iPod, Steve-O. Like, do you know what I mean? And without that, we wouldn't have had the iPhone, the iPad, these innovations. You know, surely you've got to embrace a culture of innovation here in sports.
No, but if
we can use the internet on a match ball, then you might have a point there. But you know.
Enrique will never quit football.
The eyeball. No, that's an idea.
I'm with Andy on the, it's a shit looking football. Like, it looks like, you know, when you walk into Lifestyle or Champion and there's that big fucking bin of balls in the middle.
Sorry,
in
Lifestyle or Champion, the clubs you go to.
Yeah. But you know, there's that big bin of yeah. balls for a tenner, and they're just the shittest looking
football. Yeah, the no-name balls.
And, and you're just looking, you go, fuck off, I'm not buying them. Yeah. So that's exactly
what it looks like. It looks like a
Warrior ball. I know, it does.
The designers of Warrior just went on the usual fucking mad ones
trip
and just like created this piece of shit. Like,
what's
the yellow version going to look like when it's winter?
I don't know. Dark yellow. Like, going back to your point, you know, it's dark. It's going to be hard to pick it out on the television.
Yeah. It's all branding, guys.
Of course it is. And you can't...
Just explain to me how this ball is actually going to improve Nike's revenue.
Because we've just spent 5 minutes talking about it.
But
whereas if it was just a white ball, we wouldn't be talking about it.
We wouldn't say anything about it.
We've mentioned Nike 5 times in the conversation. So
and we
some
only,
marketing
and
guys
we're only
going,
paid,
cha-ching,
we're only
cha-ching.
Paid a slight fee for that.
Yeah, exactly. And they only asked us to mention it 3 times. And we've mentioned it 5 times. So we've done a good job.
Well, I could design a ball that people are going to stand and talk about.
Yeah, that hair is
way better. And nobody's even asking him. It's crazy.
And he's like, Balotelli, where are all these Kevin people? And
fucking my hair.
Sports.
Did you see unlikely
him, that surfer was off punching sharks again.
Who, the South African or the...
Their man Mick Fanning, there was another video of him punching some shark.
Is this the fella that nearly got his leg bitten off?
Yeah, I was in the competition and gave the shark a dig and then went on and competed on the competition. He's arguably like the fucking maddest man alive. Either that or he's very tasty.
The shark version of Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, on the first video of him punching the shark, my favourite bit was how quickly he went from shitting himself to whack it to just punching the shark. It's like, fuck off.
Fuck off, shark.
It's almost like he was annoyed. He wasn't frightened. He was like, fuck off. Like, Jesus Christ.
We're in a competition here.
Trying to fucking surf, you dick.
You know when you're in a bar and some guy like bumps into the wrong guy and the guy turns around. Oh, fuck off, like, just get out the way.
I'd say when he woke up the next morning and that just hit home, he was just like, oh,
I know. He'd never get back.
Why did I punch a shark?
Just for our listeners, these were the first 3 words that people sent in to us when we said, just send in a word: spurting, shite talk, and AIDS.
Right.
So, you know, lots of topic to get into there. So, whiskey. Any whiskey drinkers in the room?
I actually... I had my... I bought my first glass of whiskey ever last weekend, the weekend before last. And I'd never... Like, a lot of my mates would be whiskey drinkers and whatever when we're out, and I'm always like, that's wanky. But I was at an engagement party and your man who's getting married, I said, what are you having? And he said...
Whoa. Let's rewind something back there.
Yeah.
Last night we had a discussion on WhatsApp. Somebody's... baby is born, do not agree with buying the baby a present.
No.
But you went to an engagement party.
Yeah, because I was going to get drunk. There was something in it for me. Ask me, did I get them a present?
An engagement? Imagine a party.
Did I get them a present? No. I just went and drank with them.
Go on, they were just.
That's what I'm saying. I just went
and sorry. See, and the guy getting engaged bought you a whiskey.
No. I bought him a whiskey.
Oh, you bought him?
I bought him a drink.
So you asked him what he was having.
And I said, what are you having? And there was some fucking 12 year old scotch. And he says, I'll have a glass of that. So I was like,
the fucking scabby. Not only is he having an engagement.
Rinsing me.
He wants a 20 euro glass of fucking whiskey.
Well, we had one each. So, that was my first ever one. It was
How did you drink it?
I drank about one cube of ice.
Yeah,
that's all.
But how did you drink it?
See, this is the problem. I've never been a whiskey drinker, so I sipped it and tried to let the flavour in my mouth did I enjoy it.
Well, what I drank, which is, if there's anyone listening who kind of fancies this whole image of having a whiskey when they're out, try a Glenfiddich. It's only about 12 euro. Like, whereas you could pay 20 euro or. You know, it's a tenner, actually.
Well, if anyone from Glenfiddich is listening and wants to send us some free bottles, that would be greatly appreciated. Okay, another word, lads, is Toblerones. Anyone got any funny stories about Toblerones?
Oh, funny Andy? Story, but already shaped like a triangle.
Because the Swiss chocolate, isn't it? And they're trying to make it like the Alps.
No. So it fits in the box, obviously.
It just always reminds me of... All right, another food-based one was porridge, lads. Any of you porridge eaters in the morning?
Yeah, Stevie, you're definitely a porridge
eater.
Once
it comes to wintertime, I am. I wouldn't be eating porridge during the summer, but yeah. Bit of honey, cinnamon, raisins.
Yeah.
Flavins, proper oats now, or getting the ready-mixed stuff?
Jumbo oatlets.
Proper oats.
Yeah. Leave them in the fridge overnight.
I tell you what, actually, I was on a stag last year, and if you get those big jumbo oatlets and soak them in orange juice overnight, and then a dollop of natural yogurt and some fresh berries.
You did this on a stag?
No. I got that for
best stag.
Sorry. Yeah.
Stag.
We went to a cooking class and
Rachel Allen was there.
We were over in Manchester staying the Ibis, and there was literally, as you walked out, there was this little place for breakfast, but I couldn't stomach a fry. I just wasn't able for it, and I ended up getting this. And it was fucking gorgeous. There's a little tip now. Soak them in orange juice.
What do you think? Fucking Ready Rex Grey? No, it's like fucking...
Central heater for kids.
Yeah, well, it's like porridge, except it's got the fucking shit knocked out, but like...
It's being milled to powder, basically.
Yeah. But the guy was giving the little fella the Ready Rex and then with mashed banana in it. And I tasted it and I was like, holy shit.
Where have you been?
Smile on his face.
Best ever. Yeah. And then again, as you say, a bit of cinnamon or honey in it, you're fucking hell.
The trick is stick your raisins in before you cook it so that they absorb the liquid and you get nice juicy raisins then.
Yeah.
I know, my missus was making my son, proper brown bread with Nutella and banana on it, like, you know. And before she gave it to him, she took a bite of it. She was like, fuck that. She gave him a digestive biscuit. Dude, I'm like,
stick an old spoonful of Nutella into the porridge.
Mm.
Yeah. That's quality, that is. It's like chocolate porridge.
I tell you, a lot of food-based stuff today, you know, like, you know.
Yeah.
All right, we'll leave it there.
Well done, yeah.
Yep.
Thank our friends at astropark.ie, your one-stop shop for small-sided games here in Dublin. Our friends at fivetimes.co are coming to Ireland. They're going to be in Wexford on the 1st of October, Dublin on the 2nd of October, Cork, Galway and Derry, Limerick and Belfast, all the way through the rest of the latter part of the year. They've kindly donated 2 meet and greet tickets for each of the events, which we will be giving away over the course of the next few weeks. So keep an eye on our Twitter feed here at The Day Trippers and our Facebook page. We will come up with a way to get those to you. Your Day Trippers tonight were Steve Daly, Dan Roberts, Andy Young, Phil Casey and myself, Super Sheep Fancier, Dave Thomas.
I haven't watched the TV show. I have it downloaded legally recorded on my Skybox.
That's only on Netflix.
Yeah, that's what I meant. My Netflix box. I've watched it.